Welcome to the American Shakespeare Center's Blackfriars Backstage Pass on As You Like It by William Shakespeare, part of the ASC's 2011 spring season. We hope you enjoy this backstage look at the 2011 spring season and William Shakespeare's As You Like It.
Welcome to the American Shakespeare Center's podcast on As You Like It. We have with us members of the Restless Ecstasy Tour, but are no longer a tour. They're the Restless Ecstasy in residence at the Blackfriars. So they're not very restless anymore. They're just ecstasy. They're here to talk about. We have four of them here. We hope to have a fifth who rather appropriately is silent right now, because she plays Celia, and I want to talk about her silence, which I think is really interesting. But anyway, we'll get to that. So what I'd like to do is, on your podcast, on your iPod dial from 9 o'clock to about 2 o'clock, are the following actors, and they're going to introduce themselves and tell you what they play. My name is Ralph Cohen, and I am the co-founder and director of mission of the American Shakespeare Center, and I'll be leading this conversation.
Hi, I'm Denise Burbach. I play Rosalind in As You Like It.
Hi, my name is Natasha Solomon. I play Audrey LeBeau in A Lord of the Forest and As You Like It.
Kelly McKinnon, and I am Amiens in Phoebe.
My name's Chad Bradford, and I play Orlando.
Okay, let's start with Rosalind and the discussion of Rosalind or Rosalind. Was there a discussion of Rosalind or Rosalind?
There was no discussion in the rehearsal room except when we were doing our going through our paraphrasing and such. He just said, Rosalind. Okay, that's fine. But it is interesting that Celia calls Rosalind my dear Rose, and constantly brings up the rose.
Right.
And I honestly didn't think of it as something to deal with, because Jim just said, Rosalind.
Well, we all have our the people that we just listen to immediately. And yours was appropriately your director. Mine is Stephen Booth, who said to me once when I said Rosalind, and he said, I think you mean Rosalind. And Ooh. Since that time, I have done Rosalind. We did Rosalind in the two productions I've done. Mm. And it is fun when you get to the Rose part.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters much, but I was curious if there was any conversation
about
it.
Rose, yeah.
There's another pronunciation, of course, that's interesting, and that's Jaques and Jakes. Mm-hmm. And we use Jakes, do we not?
Mm-hmm.
We use Jakes, which is means toilet. And so, of course, we use it. on the other hand, we use John, which means toilet, so that's okay. So I had wanted, and it may have been a communication failure, to have all four of the women characters in the play here, because I think it's an unusual play in that it has a lot of women in it, and you, Rosalind, have the largest part for a woman in all of Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
It's the largest part for a woman. So I sort of want to follow up on your chattiness and ask you about, in preparing the role, Denise, you know, did you feel the size of the role? Did you feel the size of the chattiness?
Only when I was in the process of memorizing. As we got into rehearsal, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I talk a lot, Denise. I talk all the time, that I just didn't feel the weight of the words until I got into the rehearsal room. And Kelly is laughing silently, crazily at me right now, because she knows I talk all the time. So maybe that's something about it that I didn't realize the weight of it until. And in the rehearsal room, it was just a lot of fun playing with the other actors and getting a chance to communicate with them the way Rosalind does. Yeah.
I'm thinking now, we have Orlando here too, and I'm thinking now of that first encounter in the forest. Of course, in the very first encounter between you two, you can talk and he can't at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the fun things about that scene. Mm-hmm. But in the next encounter, Chad, and as you're in rehearsal and this strange, at least in the narrative of the play, this strange boy is just yammering on and on. I wonder, did you, in terms of having to, and making bad jokes and you know, really silly jokes, and it's just, you know, what it's like. Well, you respond. What do you feel like, as Orlando, when you first encounter Ganymede in the forest.
Yes.
What are you thinking to yourself?
Well, it's I think it's a lot of fun. I'm there in the forest, and of course I'm on my mission to put Rosalind's name on every tree and to sing her praises in that way. And then here comes this little guy that's that's just throwing me all this energy. That's this, you know, giving me like you said, telling me these, you know, interesting jokes. And I think that I'm a little bit put off, but then I just kind of become bewitched by. There's a spark. There's something.
Do you do any kind of? This person is interesting, and there's a spark, and it puts me in mind of something I've seen before. Or do you just not go there at all? That
for me.
And what this is about, audience, is whether or not. Since Denise is playing Rosalind playing Ganymede, then playing Rosalind,
mm-hmm.
There's the in the narrative. If you don't know the play, Orlando, who has fallen in love with, we'll just say Rosalind, has fallen in love with Rosalind, is now confronted with somebody in the woods dressed like a boy who nonetheless would, on some level, look like Rosalind.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the question.
Well, I think after the there's kind of the back and forth about time.
Right.
And I think at the end of that, I stop the fooling and I say, where dwell you, pretty youth? And I think at that moment, there's something that kind of hits me. There's an attraction. I feel some kind of chemistry between the young strange kid in the forest and myself. And so at that point, the kind of the fooling stops, and I want to get to know this interesting
character. Yeah, and that's an interesting two words, pretty youth.
Yes,
is an interesting.
And I think that's a big clue for the actor is, you know, this isn't just some, you know, kid that runs around in the forest and is dirty and covered in, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. But there's something special about this young man who's just talks all the time and is running around the stage. You know?
Right. And it has in it some sort of homoerotic thing, pretty youth. Mm-hmm. And because later in the scene, this pretty youth is going to say to you, well, I tell you what, I can cure you of being in love if you I can cure you. And you say, I don't want to be cured.
Right.
And then, in one of the great voltafaces in the history of literature, you go, yeah, I would. you completely turn around. Okay. All right, fine. You know, and the plan is for you to go to the cottage of the young man and pretend that the young man is a woman
mm-hmm.
and to woo her. So, and I'm just curious. I mean, there's a lot of homoeroticism in all of that. And I think one of the great things about this play is it absolutely confuses everything about gender. So is you know, do you do anything with that? Are you I don't mean homoerotically exactly,
mm-hmm.
but do you wrestle with that at all as you decide, okay, yeah, I'll go? I mean, why do you decide you go? The simpler way to put it.
In that moment, I think there is a little bit of a moment that goes a little bit deeper in the next scene. But in that moment, it's because I've just been so charmed by who this person is as a human being that at first I'm like as you said, I say no, that is not going to happen. But then Denise does a great job of convincing me. She stands there in a very feminine attitude, and she not only is there some sort of a, just like we said, pretty youth, there's an attraction there, but there's also something in Orlando that says, this is going to be fun. Like, I just watched you entertain. She even says, entertain you, spit on you, this and that.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, I can't pass this up. You have just overwhelmed me with charm, with wit, with everything. And you know, I'm just in the forest with my buddy Adam and this other guy. And it's like, you're kind of the most interesting thing going right now. And so in that
Adam's
moment,
neither pretty nor a youth.
But the way Denise asked the question again, I just can't refuse. The way
that's
she's standing, the tone of her voice.
Yeah.
You know.
That's lovely. There's something about this play that, as you probably all know, is about as random as you can get in so many ways. We have here with us another character who falls in love with Rosalind, and that's Phoebe. And I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that moment for you.
It's interesting for Phoebe because we hear about her so much before we actually meet her. And she's this harpy. And everyone feels so bad for Silvius. But I think if you're looking at it from Phoebe's point of view, and you can see it in the women's faces in the audience. Thank God we can see the women's faces in the audience.
Mm-hmm. True.
Anybody that whines that much, nobody really wants. Mm-hmm. Right. And for the first time, it's one of those people. For me, she's one of those people that if you have a sharp tongue, not that I'm saying I'm familiar with that sort of person, you want someone who can stand up to you. You don't want to push over. Mm-hmm. You want to have fun. And I don't know if Phoebe understands every word Rosalind says after a while. Sometimes it's just that, you know, I picture that Far Side cartoon where you see the man talking to a dog. And it's
the dog
just hears blah, 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 ginger.
Yeah, right.
And I think after a while, sometimes that's all Phoebe hears because she's just staring. Man, it's that tone of voice and it's that face and that's what I want, man.
Well, that's later on, of course, it is as though it's dawning on you what he did say to you later as you decide whether or not you like him or not. Mm-hmm. You know, he did say this about me, but then he did. So it's almost as though you're hearing him sort of in an echo chamber later on, a slow echo chamber.
Yeah,
and it still doesn't discourage you at all. It doesn't discourage. You know what? I kind of just so the first thing you hear from this person is the following speech. If you don't mind, would you mind doing it, Denise? Where and just set this up for the audience. What's happening here is Silvius is trying to court Phoebe, and you do have a very funny speech that I want to talk about later about trying to wound him with your eyes, which is a wonderful way of sending up hundreds of sonnets that have been written. And so you see this, and you say the following, and I just think it's just a collection of great insults.
Oh, great, okay. And why, I pray you, who might be your mother that you insult, exult, and all at once over the wretched? What, though you have no beauty, as by my faith I see no more in you than without candle may go dark to bed, must you be therefore proud and pitiless? Why, what means this? Why do you look on me? I see no more in you than the ordinary of nature's sail work. Odds my little life, I think she means to tangle my eyes too. No, faith, proud mistress, 'tis not your inky brows, your black silk hair, your bugle eyeballs, nor your cheek of cream can entail my spirits to your worship. And then she goes on to talk to Silvius about why in the world do you love her? You guys are strange. What are you doing?
Right. Well, the thing about, you know, this is why there are ugly children in the world. Because you don't have any better taste than this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one snap after another. It's snap, 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 snap. Mm-hmm. And it ends with, and I just had to have this in it, the thing in her ear.
Oh, but mistress, know yourself, down on your knees and thank heaven fasting for a good man's love. For I must tell you, friendly, in your ear, sell when you can. You are not for all markets.
Wonderful line. So you've seen this. I'm talking to Phoebe now. So Phoebe Kelly, as you know, you've heard this thing, and you come out of that. You're simply not moved at all by any of that, right? It feels almost good, right?
Yeah. I mean,
okay, especially compared to Silvius, right?
It's alive as opposed to the simpering.
Well, later in the play, when it's revealed that she's she's a she, and that therefore she's not really accessible to you. And you have to talk about how you deal with your consolation prize there at the end, because you end up with Sylvia's.
It was funny because another one of the reasons why I love this good long tour, because where I started is not where I am now.
Oh, good. Talk about that.
I started off with it was a consolation prize, and I'm going to just suck it up and go, I will not eat my word, now thou art mine. And it'll be okay. I mean, he really does love me, and it'll be fine. And then the more we did the show, the less comfortable I was with that choice. So
okay, wait. Why?
It's not satisfying at all. I don't think it's satisfying the people around me. You can, because of the way we do the shows, you can feel it happen. And it just doesn't match the language either.
We're playing in the light, audiences all around. You can feel an audience like or not like.
Yes.
A choice. And
it just didn't sit. It felt like I'd put on someone else's suit. It didn't fit right. And so recently, I would say, I started it at the tail end of the road. We have that lovely Hymen song that Jake Mahler sings. And it's so silly that Dennis Henry, who plays Sylvius, and I end up doing this goofy dance in the corner. And I've made that be a light switch for her. Suddenly she's found the fun in the situation. So by the time she makes the reconciliation, it's what she wants to do.
It's what she wants. Happy ending.
Yeah. It's a comedy.
Well, we have four marriages at the end of this play. Mm-hmm. We finally get the four marriages Shakespeare wouldn't let us have at the end of Love's Labour's Lost.
Yeah.
And we have four marriages. And one of those is Natalie's as Audrey. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about your marriage and to whom.
Well, at the end of this show, after I think a lot of sort of switchbacking, Audrey and Touchstone are united. I think for my character, it's a really happy thing. I think in the third sort of scene that Touchstone and Audrey have together, you know, when finally, like, I think, you know, Rick and I have both sort of, like, come to the conclusion that, like, you know, this is awesome. Like, this is what we want. We're going for it. And I think it's a very happy thing, you know, for all that Jake's at the end, you know, says that, like, our, you know, marriage just voyage is but 2 months fiddled. Like,
yeah.
I'm not sure that she necessarily understands what that means, but I think the prospect of the marriage voyage is a very exciting one.
Well, that's a whole lot. Yeah. Oh, are you horny?
Oh, I think so. I remember, I'm just saying. I remember talking to Jim about this, like, at the beginning, you know, because I was like, I don't really know, like, what this girl is about, you know. And I remember one of the first things that he said to me was that, like, he's like, you know, I think she really cares about Touchstone. He's like, she may be a little easily distracted by bugs and other such things, but, like, you know, like, she has a good heart. And I think, you know, yeah, she says, you know, Brandy Rome is calling.
Oh, good. We have an editor. I think Tony Tambasco will edit this out. And if she can, fine. And if not, she shouldn't feel bad about it.
Awesome. I think she's going to take it. You know, she says, I hope it is no dishonest desire to be a woman of the world, you know, and I think she's ready for that step.
And she's pretty aware of his being horny.
Yeah.
Right. Rick plays it. It was great.
Yes,
no way for you to mistake that. Okay. So I just love the women in this play because they sort of represent every kind of view toward romantic love. Yours is a kind of practical one. Yours is yours being Natalie. I'm sorry. Audrey's is sort of a practical one.
Hmm.
This is cool. And it's a guy. And you have a kind of already got a boyfriend, but this guy's, you know, I want to talk about that in a minute. And then for Phoebe, I don't think anything of this romantic love until it hits you amidships yourself. Then you have a different, this is a play in which everybody has a kind of different take on love. It's a very remarkable play. And not only do they have a different take on love, but in the course of the play, their take on love shifts. Again and again and again, it shifts. And is she going to be able to make it?
No, she won't.
She won't be able to hear. Celia, I'll talk for her then. If Celia were here, she would be able to say that she gets really tired of hearing about love. Mm-hmm. It is something that she – until Oliver walks in and then she's like, oh, my God, I'm in love. So there's a lot of sort of attitudes about that. You do have another boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me kind of how you guys have conceived of William and your relationship with William.
I think that, like – William is a good guy. You know, he's that good guy. And I think that if I don't get Touchstone, because I think, you know, in that second scene where we're introduced to Touchstone, you know, or I'm sorry, where we're introduced to William, like, we haven't gotten married like we were supposed to. And I think that above all, you know, like, Audrey's like, okay, you know, like, I'll give up the goods, but we have to get married. You know, I think that that is very important to her. And so, you know, like, kind of conveniently, like, William comes in, who cares very much about her. And I think the cool revelation that I've had recently with this is, like, watching Touchstone sort of, like, be like, oh, a competitor, and then really kind of, like, step up, you know, and be like, no, like, I'm going to be the one that marries this woman. And, you know, I think that if he hadn't done that, like, cool, it would have been fine for Audrey to be with William. But I think...
What about William? I mean, his poor heart.
I know. It's really funny. The audience, to watch the audiences, you know, like, because he's such a lovable character. Oh my gosh. You know, and the best moment. And I think one of my favorite moments is when we were rehearsing this, was kind of realizing that Audrey likes them both. Like, there is something really lovable about William, and I think a really great thing to get to sort of, you know, experience that and experience, you know, what's so great and pure about William's love. But I know. Unfortunately, he kind of...
Well, the sexual politics of Audrey are really remarkable and very, very interesting. And they seem to me to be connected to if any other character in Shakespeare, Cleopatra. There's not the sense that loving one guy means you don't love the other guy.
Yeah.
And she's sort of such a... She's got such a simplicity to her about it, you know. I mean, hey, here's my boy. Oh, here's William now. You know, it's not. There's not a sense of, uh-oh, here comes my boyfriend. There's going to be a fight. It's, here's William, you know. And mm-hmm. and then it's like, it's up to Touchstone to teach you that you're only supposed to have one guy and that he gets to be the guy. That seems mm-hmm. to be his job. But your response is so remarkably funny and wonderful. And then William, to me, I mean, I'm only saying, what's the name of the forest we're in?
Arden.
What's Shakespeare's family name on his mother's side?
Arden.
Arden. Mm-hmm.
What's Shakespeare's first name on his own son?
William.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
and here's this William that lives in the forest of Arden coming in and this little cameo moment, and we have no idea about him until the beginning of the scene, right? I mean, there's no mention of this character, and then suddenly he walks in, and he is lovable. I mean, I think, and the character I always think about with him is Aguecheek.
Yes.
Everyone loves Aguecheek in Twelfth Night, and everyone always loves William. You can't not love William. Mm-hmm. And it's a remarkable moment, and I do think that that's one of the reasons I love Audrey so much, is that she just, like, I love him, you know, and I love, oh, well, bye, William.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very kind of, you know, see you, William. And I just think that's one of the great things about it. Another one of those. This play is made up of so many random things that turn out on thinking about them to be actually the way the world sort of works. I mean, it always looks illogical, and the reason that if Celia had been here, I'd want it is to get to this amazing moment with the necklace and who wrote the poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about that, but just to, again, to help with the podcast, in the play, you give, when you first meet him, you give Orlando a necklace.
Yeah, chain around my neck.
A chain around his neck. And then when he comes into the forest, he does what every guy does when you go in a forest, which is basically write poetry and put them on trees.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's been putting poetry on trees. And this is, again, such a random thing. And then you and Celia have a conversation about the poetry and how it isn't any good or this or that or another thing. And then she says to you, no, you're not who's written these things. And you say you don't. No. And I would like you to just talk about that conversation. What ensues in that conversation?
She keeps giving me little tidbits, like he wears a chain that you once wore about your neck.
And how many people in your history have you put a chain around their neck?
No one else except Orlando.
Right, exactly. So,
but I want to hear her say the name, exactly. And she won't say the name until she's started playing me. Oh, this is wonderful. This is great. Ha ha. You don't know who it is. You don't get it. Ha ha. And I went, please just tell me. I know I look like a man, but I really need to be the girl right now and find out who this is. But I need to hear her say his name so I know for sure that all of this is true. I even say, speak sad brow and true
name. After she says Orlando.
Yes, after
she says Orlando. So even after she says Orlando, you go, tell me the truth.
Yeah.
Right.
Are you being honest? Are you being truthful?
And it is.
Then you just kind of get to float on a cloud for a minute of, yay, it's him.
Well, again, when I think about, this is a play, not that anybody in the podcast needs to know this. This is a play that when I first directed it, I was doing it because we hadn't done it yet, and it's an A-side. It's basically a famous type play.
Yeah.
And Jim was doing other things, so I said, sure, I'll do it. And I didn't much care about this play. And then we did it, and I thought, this is the most wonderful play. I'm still really in my top now because it's so real. And the first time I read it and I read that conversation, I didn't get it at all. Why doesn't this woman understand who wrote those poems? It's like, who else could have written those poems? And the very fact of the your absolute obstinate stupidity is what makes it so real. And we've all had that kind of conversation. Somebody likes you. No, he doesn't. Mm-mm. You know, no, he doesn't. You know, who is it? Who is it? And that whole thing, we've all heard that. And it's one of the realest things in the play, and it's one of the most ridiculous. And that's, again, this keeps happening again and again in this play. It's just this, it's really a wonderful, wonderful play. And the production is, everyone delights in it. Talk about a little about that and how people have felt about the production. Now, what's it been like to put it on? I know you did Macbeth the most of all of your shows, but second was As You Like It, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes, As You Like It was a close second. And as far as how audiences have received it, I think that of all of our plays, it certainly brings, because of the subject matter, because of the comedy, I think it brings so much joy to an audience to revel in the love of four different sets of people getting married at the end. You have the god of marriage descending and playing songs, and there's music, and it just it really offers a lot as far as music, comedy, love. In the beginning, we have some great conflict between the brothers going head to head, and then tragedy with "Get out of here or I'll kill you."
Yeah.
But you know, and Rosalind has the whole thing about my father, and you know, you banished him. I'm not a traitor. So there's some serious stuff going on, but then it's just so lovingly balanced out with the comedy.
As soon as they get in the forest, the whole plot just stops.
Yeah.
You know, it just completely stops. And in fact, there's a moment, and I can't remember how you guys did it because I haven't seen it since September, so I'm looking forward to seeing it again. But there's a moment when you're yammering on and on to Celia. And remember, the reason you went into the forest was to look for your father.
Mm-hmm.
And you're yammering on to her about, I ran into the Duke yesterday.
Yeah.
And the next lines she says are really angry. They're very angry.
Mm-hmm.
She starts saying really ugly things about Orlando.
Yeah.
And when Corinne comes in and says, just comes in, she says, yes? You know, like, you know, and what of him? You know, and she's like rude.
Yeah.
Because I think you put her in a really bad mood because she just heard that you've been hanging out with the same guy y'all gave up everything to go and find.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't even mentioned it to her.
Yeah, didn't even mention that I ran into my dad.
Yeah, right. Does she respond? I can't remember what she did in
it. She does. She just gets rude and unhappy. And that's the reason we're here. And you told me you've already talked to him.
Right. Because
And
it's just, again, it's so random. The play has stopped.
Yeah.
And we get to meet all these people who seem to be wandering around in the forest, like Jakes. Like, that just doesn't make – and, of course, the god of marriage. Mm-hmm. And they're hermits. We hear about hermits.
Yes.
And it's the most magical thing in the world, this play. It's just wonderful.
There's something about – because the plot just stops when you get into Arden, you get to watch people just be who they are, not – forced into doing anything because there's no plot pushing you towards something. There is, you meet people and then your life just kind of
you talk.
Unravels and happens. You know,
melancholy.
It's
Let's
great.
Talk about whether it's good to be melancholic.
Yeah.
Let's talk about being in love. What's it like to be in love?
And where can you do that?
So let's talk about what courtly manners are and what they aren't. And let's just yammer about that. Let's talk about logic. let's have a little, it's remarkable and silly. And then, oh, yes, it has to be. In the middle of all of this is, what's the name of the priest, the guy?
Martex.
Yes.
They're bad ministers walking around, too. And there's just everybody's in the, I mean, it's the most populated place in all of Shakespeare,
yeah.
Arden. You know,
really
if you ever
impressive.
Think about it, it's, And I get such a thrill out of this play. I'm sorry to be, I don't normally do these in the podcast, but I'm such a fan of this play. I think, it's a sign of my maturity that I love it so much. And that's what I think. And it was a sign of my immaturity that I resisted its kind of feminine charms, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got a kind of male engine at the beginning, all plot, all logic, all like you were saying, Chad, just complete energy and tragedy and it's all that stuff. And then suddenly a woman takes over. Mm-hmm. In a forest, and everybody yammers on and on and has a lovely time, and the god of marriage comes and fixes everything. And you can't get silly. And yet you just leave the theater feeling sort of like you did after Midsummer Night's Dream, but maybe even a little more human than that, because it's about humans being magical.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I've gone on. I have other questions to ask, but especially of Chad, I think, a little bit, because Orlando is an odd character. I mean, I want to know, when you read him the first time and you're getting ready, have you ever played him before?
No.
Okay, so you're playing Orlando for the first time. What are you thinking as you sort of explore him, as you look at your script?
Well, in first reading it, just from having impressions of seeing bits and pieces of other productions, there was an impression of, because I have played Lysander before and read other of those types of young lover kind of characters, but as I got into the role more and just worked on it more and more, I got the impression that he was a regular dude, you know, having to, like my buddies back home in Arkansas, it's like during the summertime I go do landscaping and I go work on houses doing construction, but I still, then they'll tell me about their girlfriend, and they get so excited about it, and that's all they talk about. And then I wrote her a song. This is the song I wrote her, and of course it's awful, but it's like, but it's like it's coming.
Put
straight.
That on a tree.
I know.
But it's coming straight from their hearts,
and
it makes them endearing, and I love those guys. And so, the more I got into it, the more I realized, you know. The poetry, whatever, he's not thinking about how good or bad it is. He's doing it for the woman he loves, and he's hoping that somehow, through the magic of the universe, she'll feel the energy through the notes that he's writing.
Oh, he gets insulted about his writing all the time, and it doesn't bother him at all.
Right.
I mean, she insults him about his writing. Jake insults him about his writing, and he goes like, I don't care. You know,
yes.
So I think I love your analogy to the Arkansas dudes. That's really cool, because you, and the first time we see you, I mean, you're a farmer, basically. You're working hard, and you have a fight right away and win it. So it's as though Shakespeare knew he was going to be showing a really wimpy guy in terms of lovey, dovey, soft, and mushy. And he contextualizes you with not one but two physical fights.
Right.
So we know you're a tough dude. And this is what happens when a tough dude falls in love.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the wonderful things about the play is the way you're – so you're kind of lovesick, and then you meet her. And then – so what's your deal? What's your deal, Rosalind, with what are you trying to do to this guy? I mean, you know who it is now, and you do this whole deal about I'm going to teach you how to be a love – what is it you think about men and women? Because one of the lines you just said is, I'm a woman, I can't hold my tongue, which is a pretty offensive line, I think, in today's sexual politics.
Which I think is interesting. Right. And the line, do you not know I am a woman when I think I must speak? We were doing a show at Hollins University, and it's an all-girls school. It's an all-girls college. And actually, we were talking about this in the van on the way. They're like, oh, God, I don't know how they're going to take that line. I mean, it seems so ridiculous to make women think that that is just, it just seems like a bad thing in today's society.
Yeah, it's a stereotype.
Yeah, it's a terrible stereotype. When I said it, the entire place erupted with cheers. It, like, they took it, Kelly even phrased this, that they took it as a feminist war cry.
It became, you cannot shut up a woman.
Why would you want to shut up a woman? Right. Because they're saying things that are important. And it was just the most thrilling thing to experience. I mean, the play stopped for a good few seconds. Yeah. Like, could not keep talking. It was so loud. So it's interesting to think that it is a timeless line and how each generation will take it and how each generation will take that character. I was talking to a faculty member somewhere, and they said, I really liked your Rosalind, because when previous shows I've seen her, she's just a real cow, and I don't like her. How does she, like, she says this to me, and she says, I don't see how she can keep doing this to another human being, to do that to Orlando. But she said, I really love how there is something so positive about Rosalind was flying by the seat of her pants as she was doing this, but she was so honest. And every time Orlando came up with something that didn't quite fit, like, why would you kill yourself for love? I'd rather have you alive. Don't do that. Rosalind, in pure joy and pure passion for this human being, keeps coming up with these things that I think are just wonderful. And
well, men have killed themselves from time to time. But, and worms have eaten them.
Yeah, but not for love.
And that's really, it's really true. Men don't, you know, much kill themselves for love.
Yeah.
But back to that line that they like so much at Holland's. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing from a male point of view that women get to take credit for something I think all guys sort of think is true. Though I must say your dudes in Arkansas sound like they're pretty good about talking about their feelings, which is the ability to talk about feelings. You know, mm-hmm. guys get together and they don't, for the most part, talk about their feelings. Or maybe some guys do. But, you know, as the stereotype goes, that's a good stereotype about women being able to share their feelings, mm-hmm. right? Also,
that
just
they don't shut
having
up.
A voice. The idea of having a voice is a good thing. So it's really interesting to me that mm-hmm. Holland's women sort of took those things and went, yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really interesting.
It was quite an experience.
Oh, that's great. So other memories about the show and things people like, and is there, are, do you each have comic moments when you're looking for a laugh? What's, mm-hmm. you know I'm going to get a laugh here. Can you think about that for yourself? Say, for example, Kelly as Phoebe, is there a moment you know like if I nail it, I get this?
Well, it's funny. It's more of an overriding thing that's been interesting within the show is watching the audience on who's going to side with Sylvius and who's going to side with Phoebe. Mm. I'm almost always getting all the women, and it's a rare night because in it, just the way women look at men in this society, I think, and it's it is fascinating to be able to watch them and see what happens. But it's mostly there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of can I corner Denise in the mm-hmm. stage where she can't leave. Right. The chase scene that we have is so much fun for me.
Right.
But I think if I'm on stage as Phoebe, it's so frenetic that it's got to be all about what I'm doing, and it can't be about what's going to land for me.
Do you ever get any laughter on the thing about the eyes which are the softest? Can you do that?
I'm pretty sure and very probable that eyes are the frailest.
Right? So what's happened here is that Sylvius, as lovers did, has said to the woman he's loved that she wounds him with her eyes.
Yeah.
And you take him up and you literalize this very cliche thing about getting wounded with eyes. And you say,
'tis pretty sure and very probable that eyes, that are frailest and softest things, who shut their coward gates on atomies, should be called tyrants, butchers, murderers. Now I do frown on thee with all my heart, and if mine eyes can wound, now let them kill thee. And
does that get a laugh?
Yeah, it usually gets a laugh. Because I'm trying to kill him with my eyes.
Right, because what you're doing, Mom.
Yeah.
You're doing it right. And I always think of that. Again, she gets so dumb with love. Mm-hmm. And this happens a lot with all these characters. Mm-hmm. They get so dumb with love that Shakespeare has to make it clear to us in other ways that they are not dumb people.
Right.
And you get to have the thing you just said, which is such a, you know, it's a great retort to every sonnet ever written in a way. And you've just delivered it beautifully. when your whole brain goes out the bottom of your brain, man, right? Because you fall in love. Similarly, you, and I'm now pointing to Chad, has Orlando has this kind of amazing male. We learn all these things about you. You're generous. You can carry old men through the woods. You can beat up on wrestlers. You can beat up on your own brother. You have a cause. You get all these other things about you before we found out that when it comes to being in love, you're a wuss. And that keeps happening. So you meet him in the woods, and now I'm pointing back at Rosalind. And you meet him in the woods, and you want to fix him. And you were talking about that just a little bit more, like. What do you want him to come out of this with, other than you?
I want to find out what he's really like, and I think the social mores of the time, of our time, even, there are so many things we're unwilling to let go of or let a person see, because we're worried about how they think about us. Why would he really give a care about what Ganymede really thinks about him? If I were to take down my hair and go, I'm Rosalind, ha, 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 he would start to step back and go, oh, I got to show you the good side of me, or I got to show you what I think you want.
Oh, well, wonderful point. He doesn't have to care what the pretty youth thinks.
He really doesn't. And I think that's something that Rosalind can also let go, because she can also tell him what she thinks about love and what she thinks about life and how you should go about things without saying, hi, I'm Rosalind. You can just say it as somebody who, in the vast scheme of things, is not important. Therefore, you actually might listen to them.
So all that stuff about women being able to cheat on their husbands because they're so smart and clever.
Yeah.
How do you think that's working with him? What are you testing him on, or what are you doing there?
I think it's about you got to admit we're smart. We know what we can do if we want to do it. If we trust you, and we know that you're thinking of our better good and our betterment. I mean, then why would we make such a choice? But know that we can. We are that smart.
It has, again, I keep talking about other plays, mm-hmm. but that's that great Amelia mm-hmm. speech.
Yeah.
In Othello, which is the same thing. You know, women can have fun too. We can cheat if we need to cheat.
Yeah.
And okay, then there's a moment. And I think it's 5:1 or 2, when you say, how's your arm?
Yeah.
Can y'all, I want to talk about that. Could y'all just do that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, my dear Orlando, how it grieves me to see thee wear thy heart in a scarf.
It is my arm.
I thought thy heart had been wounded with the claws of a lion.
Wounded it is, but with the eyes of a lady.
Did your brother tell you how I counterfeited to swoon when you showed me your handkerchief?
Aye, and greater wonders than that.
Oh, I know where you are. Nay, 'tis true. There was never anything so sudden. And then they go on to talk about Celia and Oliver and being in
love. Yes, but then right after, maybe I started you too early. And I do want to talk about this moment, too, mm-hmm. which is a fascinating moment where I think a lot of productions screw up, because at this moment in many productions, what will happen is greater wonders than that is about Oliver having discovered that actually this is not a boy but a girl, and that's not what it is. The greater wonders is that they fell in love,
right.
and Oliver fell in love with Celia and vice versa. That's what you're really talking about.
Yeah.
Though I do think it is a moment for you to be concerned about what it is.
And I think it's interesting in when you first meet Oliver. Oliver asks about Rosalind being at court, and of course he's looking to make a wealthy marriage. He's trying to, I mean, there's a lot of things that Oliver may recognize Rosalind. He's at court, whereas Orlando is out in the fields doing work. He sees Rosalind for the first time just before the wrestling. Oliver may it's a point of contention for many scholars and directors. Does Oliver recognize Rosalind? And does Rosalind try to hide it from Oliver?
How do y'all play it?
That he does not recognize Rosalind.
I mean, I find if you do that, to me, it's like a...
It's the end of the play.
Yeah, you know, I play the end of the play.
Yeah, as soon as Orlando knows it's Rosalind, the play is over, which you don't want to do until the last few words
of
the play.
Right, and you don't want his brother knowing something and not telling. I mean, there's too many layers. And besides, the brother's got other things to think about right now, and that's Celia.
Yeah.
And, but right after that, though, you say you can live no more by...
I can live no more by thinking.
It's an amazing moment mm-hmm. when you just say the game's over.
Yeah.
And you say,
I will weary you then no longer with idle talking.
Yeah, and that's a really, isn't that interesting? Because yeah. we've been, the whole play has been kept aloft for two for at least two acts, a little bit more mm-hmm. than two acts, by this game. Mm-hmm. And the game ends as soon as you say, I don't want to play the game, and mm-hmm. you go, okay, we won't play the game. I mean, that's yeah. it's that quick that the there's not it's not a slow move, mm-hmm. it's a quick move, and what do you mean by that when you say I can live no more by
thinking? I think with Oliver coming and him falling in love and they're going to get married, it puts me in a different place. The fun has been great. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been good. You've been trying to cure me of this love sickness. And I've been using my mind. I've been trying to think about, you know, I can't think anymore. I can't play this game. And so it's just the
end
of
it. But you said it at the very beginning. It's really true. Watching my brother really have real happiness, mm-hmm. you know, makes this sort of abstract game that we're playing ridiculous to me.
Right. I see reality with my brother's love with Eliana. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to play anymore.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. It's such a... okay, I've made exactly. clear how I feel about the play.
Yeah.
Okay. What we do two things always in these, and I've been doing a second one I added, which is I want you to think right now about the place to start, and you're thinking, what is the thing you're looking most forward to? The moment on stage or coming on stage or whatever that you really look forward to. You know, your evening is going to... Because you work very hard and you got to do a lot of stuff, but you do get the pleasure of this one moment that I'm talking about. Think what that might be. And then the other thing is at the end, I want you all just to choose a favorite speech, say why, and then give the speech, and we'll go. And the speech can be as short as a line. I don't care. Mm. And it shouldn't be over six or seven.
Now we get our limits. I think something that's really interesting about doing a season as long as we do, we're contracted for 11 months, is that we get to try things. And sometimes they're vastly different with vastly different audiences. And to be on the road with places and locations where people have never seen Shakespeare in their lives or never even seen a play before. So sometimes this is their very first opportunity. Because this is a comedy, finding those technical comic moments. Shakespeare's written in most of them. He knew what he was doing. The man's brilliant. He knows how to write them in, and getting a chance to play a couple of those things. And if someone coughs out in the audience in the middle of the setup, it's blown.
Yeah,
and so you have to find a way to rework it or just those opportunities to really set it up technically and let it fall out. I think my favorite section, and one that I have to land perfectly, otherwise it doesn't work. Rosalind, Orlando is about to leave, and Rosalind says, "Alas, dear love, I cannot lack thee 2 hours. I cannot be without you for 2 hours." And he goes, "Oh, well, I'll be back again here in a second after I go talk to the Duke." And she goes on and rails and says, "I go your ways, go your ways. I knew what you would prove. My friends told me as much, and I thought no less. That flattering tongue of yours won me. 'Tis but one cast away, and so come death." 2 o'clock is your hour? And
nice.
It is a technical thing, and I didn't realize what it was. It took me a long time, but I figured it out before we went into Ren Run.
Bill, cut.
Yeah, before we went in, that you have to build it, cut down. And it's so interesting because I was looking at the script. I'm going, blah, 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 blah. 'Tis well on Castaway, so come. Death, 2 o'clock is your... That doesn't make sense. I don't understand. And realizing that you need the technique of build, turn around. I just need to say these two little words. You promise you'll come back?
Yeah.
You promise you'll come
great.
Back?
Yeah.
And
that's
so
a terrific example.
That technical repeat of how to do that.
So do you look forward to that?
I do. But it also scares the hell out of me because the other night, the first time in these 11 months that we've been doing these plays, someone coughed on my setup.
Mm-hmm. And I went, ah, bleh! And then I said the line and it didn't work. It did not work because you need a moment of silence. So I was like, oh my God, who coughed? I want to kill them. but it also reminded me that I know the technique. I can continue to do it. And the next night I got the laugh that is typically there because Shakespeare wrote it and wrote it well.
Yeah.
But it is so funny to feel that and to feel
I heard
the technique.
That there was a moment in your sleepwalking as Lady Macbeth that somebody laughed or something in the room.
Yeah, they were really uncomfortable. They didn't know what to do, so they started laughing. And it was just really awkward.
Yeah, so you were right in the middle of the sleepwalking?
Yeah, and they just got really uncomfortable with me screaming and then coming down and screaming, coming down and throwing myself on the ground, and they just didn't.
Oh, you did such a wonderful job.
They were so uncomfortable, but it's interesting to see how an audience will react to that. They'll get really nervous and not know what to do, so I'm going to giggle here. And the rest of the audience is going, what are you doing? It's funny.
My audience studies class did some wonderful papers on watching the Rin Run. Mm. And one of the papers was on bastard laughter. That is laughter that has no father, that has not should not be there. Mm-hmm. And that's a great example
of
bastard laughter.
That's great.
Somebody else, moment you look forward to.
Well, I always look forward, of course, to the wrestling.
So do all the women in the audience.
Just because it's just fun. It's just a lot of fun. But I will say,
well, good, that's fine. You want to talk about wrestling then? That's
well,
fine.
I could certainly talk about wrestling.
Oh, man.
What's your favorite moment in that?
Well, growing up, I wanted to be a professional wrestler before I wanted to be an actor, and so getting to do this is really great.
There's something so depressing about
it. I feel like it's so kind of a natural progression.
There you go.
He's from Arkansas. They didn't grow up saying, I wanted to be an actor.
Right. But so the part that's just a lot of fun is Charles comes out, and he's kind of a larger-than-life character. He's getting the audience riled up. And I'm doing my best to stick it to him. And so I've got this line after he says, you know, who's going to try to come and beat me? And he starts to taunt me a little bit. And I have the line, and you mean to mock me after. You should not have mocked me before.
Mm, yeah, and you do.
But come your ways. And then the shirts come off and we start to go at it. Just the whole wrestling scene, the way that it's been choreographed, the way that, I love being able to play with Jonathan because he's so inventive and great. The whole scene, it's just one little giggle after a laugh and then a, oh my gosh, is he really picking him up and, mm-hmm. and things like that. So that's something I always look forward to, as well as, I have to say this, in the scenes I have with Rosalind, always practicing listening, because Ganymede's going 100 miles an hour and Orlando's just like going around and saying, what? So that's fun.
Well, that's the other reason I wanted Celia here, because Celia is the biggest non-speaking part I know of. I mean, I guess Hero doesn't speak much either, but it's a different thing. And so much of the humor of the play depends on Celia's listening. And how she listens and what she feels about what you've said. And I remember many years ago I was trying to show a class how great that scene between you guys, your first scene in the farce is, and it wasn't working. And I suddenly realized why, and I pulled somebody another person out of the class, sat them there, and I said, all I want you to do is every time your cousin says something that is scandalous or stupid or anti-female, every time, just take to the audience. Just look at just hear it, and you know, and that's what makes that scene work. Mm-hmm. It's a really it would have been great to have Brandy here to talk about how hard it is to be quiet sometimes when you're going on and on and on and on and on. Anybody else? Favorite moment, Kelly, Natalie. I'm going to get to you.
Okay.
So
that first Phoebe scene is always just a delight. She has two gargantuan, completely polar opposite, juicy monologues. And there's a chase scene in between, so
yeah, it is. It's a, you're right. It's a real feast for an actor, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
is.
We haven't met you yet, so it's so refreshing for the audience. You know, one of the things people should do a study of is characters who come into plays late, because any good playwright knows, you know, I'm going to juice this up. I don't know how many of you have done this, but I go to a lot of plays. And I'll look at the cast list, and if the play is not, like, really interesting me very much, I look to see, am I going to get, is there somebody else more interesting that's going to come in? You know? And so I look down just to see, is everybody here? Is this it? Is this all I'm going to get? And it's not. When you got Phoebe still coming, you know, and we still have the God of Marriage out there, and William. So lots of people still coming, and we're already in the middle of the play. I think that's a really remarkable thing about this play.
And it's fascinating the way the ASC does things, is we do them in rep and we play multiple characters. There are two moments in our repertory that when I enter, if they have seen all three plays, there's an extra laugh.
Oh, good, tell.
And one of them is my first entrance is Phoebe. The show stopped in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
Because by then so much of the audience was familiar with me. That when I came on in pigtails, it stopped. One woman on stage just laughed so hard that we had to wait for her.
What? Well, then why?
She was pregnant,
why?
Too. We were
yeah, she was pregnant. But that's her laugh anyway. Yeah. Because, well, I look...
What do you think?
I look just like a crazy...
Just that they already knew you as something else?
Yeah. Especially if I've taught... I'm the fight captain for the podcast. And if I've taught a fight workshop as well, that's very different.
So they see you
Macbeth,
as a professional, and here you come in your pigtails.
I play a lot of boys in Macbeth, and then I come in the pigtails. And that happens also... the first Mistress Overdone entrance in Measure when I come in that crazy wig.
Yeah.
It's
fun.
Natalie, you're on.
All right. My favorite moment definitely probably is right after intermission, the first entrance with Touchstone, and Rick comes and Rick chases me onto the stage and he has the, I will fetch up your goats, Audrey. Like, and regardless, like whether we are playing for high school kids or playing for adults or whatever, like it's just funny that like a little bit of body humor like is like there's nothing better, I think, sometimes, and really, really fun to play. When we did it this week, we had a kind of like fun but rowdy group of high school kids, and I tell you what, he calls me a slut, and the boys and the girls, and we had this group of young women up in the second balcony that he was just he called me a slut, and they were not having it. It's fantastic. It's really cool to watch the audience again sort of take sides, and it's really fun. It's probably my favorite.
It's great. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. Favorite lines, and we'll stop. So just say why. Anybody go in any order. Just say, I like this because, and then do it.
In the scene with Rosalind, she says, are you he that hangs the verses on the trees? Yes, I'm he. Are you so in love as your rhymes speak? And Orlando says, neither rhyme nor reason can express how much. For me, there's the character.
That's great.
Neither rhyme nor reason can express. And I think that's kind of a microcosm of the whole play. It's like the love that comes from it. And so that's my favorite
line. Which
has
nothing to do with reason, for sure.
In between the two gargantuan monologues of Phoebe, she has that moment of absolute revelation, which you rarely get to play on stage. Dead shepherd, now I find thy saw of might. Whoever loved that loved not at first sight.
That's great. That's good. That's a true thing. It's a wonderful pivot, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrific pivot.
I think probably, again, in that first Audrey Touchstone scene, my favorite line now, which I at first, I don't think I really enjoyed it quite as much, is the Touchstone says, he's just finished complaining to everybody how it's when people don't understand what you're saying, it's completely useless. And he turns around to me and he says, I wish the gods had made thee poetical, and she, and I think one of my favorite things is that, he always talks about things that I don't think I understand. And I say I do not know what poetical is, but gosh darn, he makes it sound so cool. Man, I think for me, again, it's I don't know what that is, but then again, is it honest in word and in deed?
Well, do it.
Tell me.
Do it, yeah.
Okay, I do not know what poetical is. Is it honest in word and in deed? Is it a true thing? And he says, no, it's great.
That's wonderful. I'm going to sneak in too, just because I want to. Do you not know I am a woman when I think I must speak, purely to see how the audience will take that.
especially in today's society, and depending on what kind of audience we have, if we have a bunch of teenagers, if we have a bunch of middle schoolers, if we have a bunch of adults, if we have a mix. But I think my favorite line as we have gone on through this season is, yes, faith will I, Fridays and Saturdays and all. And it is the simplest line. It doesn't seem extravagant at all. And once again, I think it's, she says this after Orlando, she says to Orlando, now ask me what you will, I will grant it. And he turns and he just simply.
Well, we have Orlando. That's fine. Go ahead. So let's do it.
Ask me what you will. I will grant it.
Then love me, Rosalind.
Yes, faith. Will I, Fridays and Saturdays and all? And there's just something about, in the midst of all of this, Ganymede running around at 1,000 miles per hour and testing Orlando and all of these things. It's such a reminder that, yes, we all have fallen in love at first sight in this play, but real love is work. Real love is working on things, good and bad things. And I think in that moment, she remembers, yes, I'm going to love you no matter what day it is, no matter what answer you give me to whatever I'm going to ask you in this scene, even if I think it's wrong, I will still love you because we need to work. And that's, I think that's partially also why Rosalind maintains her Ganymede mask so we can actually talk and be humans together.
I love that. I love that idea. Mm-hmm. I love that line. I think that's great. I'd never thought of it before. It's so specific. And it ends with, I refuse to be even Fridays and Saturdays and all. Mm-hmm. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this Blackfriars Backstage Pass. You can download this and other programs for free at AmericanShakespeareCenter.blogspot.com or subscribe to all of the ASC's podcasts through the iTunes Music Store podcast directory or any number of other podcast listing sites. While As You Like It is no longer playing at the Blackfriars Playhouse, tickets for all five shows in our 2012 Actors Renaissance season, Much Ado About Nothing, Richard III, Philaster, A Mad World, My Masters, and Dido, Queen of Carthage, are available by calling the American Shakespeare Center box office at 1-877-MUCH-ADO or by going online at AmericanShakespeareCenter.com. I'm Tony Tambasco for the American Shakespeare Center, with special thanks to recording engineer Sam Kugler. Thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the Blackfriars Playhouse.